This podcast was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 30. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer, and I am here today with my coworker,
Michael Morale.
And we are here for our monthly roundtable discussion. Today, we will be talking about some of the latest news regarding Spinraza and Zolgensma, both of which are drugs designed to treat SMA. We will also be looking at some of the top posts on the SMA forums from the past month, as well as some of the work from our columnists on the main website. Before we begin, though, please listen to a brief word from our sponsors.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploregenetherapy.com.
All right. Well, Michael, I wanted to start by talking about a recent news article we ran on the main website at smanewstoday.com. And this article goes into detail about how Spinraza and Zolgensma can drastically improve the lives of kids with SMA. So could you give us just a quick summary of this article and maybe an excerpt from it, and just kind of, and we'll talk about our thoughts?
Absolutely. On February 26, there was an article on the SMA News Today website that stated how Spinraza and Zolgen SMA, or Zolgensma, however you want to pronounce it, could both dramatically improve the lives of kids with SMA. And I'm going to read two small quotes. It goes on to read, Spinraza, or nusinersen, an injectable medication approved 2 years ago by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to treat spinal muscular atrophy, is way overpriced. But so is its biggest potential competitor, Novartis's gene therapy, Zolgen SMA, even though both have substantially helped children receive either treatment. The last paragraph goes on to read, this is the conclusion of the Boston-based Institute for Clinical and Economic Review, otherwise known as ICER, I-C-E-R, an independent, nonpartisan watchdog agency that objectively evaluates the clinical and economic value of prescription drugs. You know, Kevin, in this article, it states that what they're trying to do is to get the price down. They say ICER recommends that Spinraza should cost anywhere from $72,000 to $130,000 for the first year of treatment and $36,000 to $65,000 in subsequent years. That's an 83% loss, basically, or less in value than the drug's current retail price, which is $750,000 for the first year and $375,000 each year after. ICER's preliminary development report stated that they found that Zolgen SMA could be more cost-effective than Spinraza with a one-time price of $2 million. One thing that we need to remember is that Zolgen SMA is a one-time treatment, but we're not sure at this time if it's going to be a one-time treatment for adults. Zolgen SMA will only be available to infants 9 months of age or younger with SMA type 1 when it first comes out. AveXis and Novartis are going through clinical trials right now to test an intrathecal delivery for those of us that are older with SMA types 2 and 3. So they really don't know if it's going to be a one-time treatment for us. But as far as the infants go, it is a one-time treatment. And I've heard from quite a few of my subscribers to my personal YouTube channel that they're extremely nervous about this $2 million price tag. You know, what will their insurance companies pick it up? But if you do the math, by the end of the second year of treatment, insurance had already paid $1,125,000 for Spinraza. If insurance companies pay $375,000 each year, if you do that math, that would bring the price tag of Spinraza to $2,250,000 for the first 5 years. You know, I tell my subscribers that even though a $2 million price tag for Zolgen SMA may seem high, if you stay on Spinraza treatments for over 5 years, insurance companies would almost be paying the same as they would if they would have approved Zolgen SMA. So what are your thoughts, Kevin?
No, I agree in that it's definitely something I've given more thought, because initially when they made the announcement, not technically the announcement, but the fact that when Zolgensma was filed for FDA approval, You know, I wasn't really thinking about it for me personally because I was satisfied with Spinraza. I still am, and I'm satisfied with Biogen. But, you know, as I think about it more, it is a possibility that I may consider it in the future because, for one, as an adult, you know, the appeal, you know, the idea of a one-time treatment or even if it's a couple times, that is more appealing to me than, you know, going in every 4 months for a shot. And like you said, the cost effectiveness of it, it does even out. So it's, I think going forward as adults with SMA, it is something we're going to have to think about in the future. Maybe not right away, because like you said, the drug is only available to type 1 infants initially, if and when it gets approved. But, you know, down the road, that could very well change. And I think there's a good possibility that it will. So, you know, for right now, I am perfectly satisfied with Spinraza, and I'm going to keep doing that. But this is a decision that I think we're going to have to think about more down the road, you know, maybe in a few years.
I completely agree with you. This is a decision that we'll have to make. You know, and I'm thinking that they'll probably, if they get Zolgensma, it may pass through the FDA. After they finish the clinical trials with the IT delivery, I mean, it could be the last of this year or sometime in 2020. So we have a while to wait. So we have time to make a decision.
Right.
But, you know, one of my subscribers sent me a note and she said, well, it sounds like you're advertising for Biogen. And I said, look, don't mistake my caution with stupidity. If I find out that Zolgensma is working good and there's good positive results that come from it for adults like us, I will have no trouble switching over if my insurance company will pay for it, of course. So just because I've been with Biogen and been with Spinraza, I'm going to do what's best for me. But what's best for me probably won't be known for a couple of years, because even if it gets approved through an IT delivery, that doesn't mean I'm going to jump on the bandwagon right away. I'm going to sit back and just see what the results are about a year or two after adults get on it.
Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, going back to like this article, it'll be interesting to look at, because we've already seen, you know, Spinraza show, or at least I have, you know, in the SMA community show really positive results for kids. You know, I mean, kids who are on the treatment from very early on there. I mean, I've seen kids with SMA who are walking and doing all kinds of things that have been on the treatment for a while.
Absolutely.
So it'll also be to see the effect of that with Zolgensma, you know, once we see the results of more people on the treatment, again, if and when it gets approved.
Right. Yeah, I know that all these children that are on Spinraza right now they're meeting and exceeding milestones of able-bodied children. So, there's a lot of excitement. I know that the physical therapist that did my reevaluation a couple of months ago, she works for AveXis. And, of course, I tried to get information from her, which let's just say I wasn't very successful. But I told her, I said, if you could sum it up into one word, what would you say? And she said, game changer.
So, yeah.
You know, and I think we're going to see the results once it gets passed through the FDA, if it gets passed. And I think people are going to be surprised. I really think Zolgensma is, like she said, I think it's going to be a game changer. But, you know, for those of us that have been on Spinraza, I'm not getting any worse. I'm getting a little bit stronger. So I know it's doing something.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and on that note, there's one other story I wanted to talk about how an infant with SMA type 1 was cured of skin lesions after being on Spinraza. And so I'll go ahead and read the lead from this story. Again, this is on, for our listeners, this is on the main website at smanewstoday.com. And the lead from this story reads, treatment with Spinraza was able to resolve many severe and widespread skin lesions in a 7-month-old infant with spinal muscular atrophy type 1, a case report shows. Although this is just a single case so far, this observation suggests that Spinraza could be beneficial to the other body systems beyond motor neurons, a theory that still needs to be confirmed in other treated patients. So this story, and you know, listeners can read the full article online, but this story is really interesting because it's, you know, when we think about these types of drugs, we're pretty much solely focused on the motor neuron aspect. So I thought it was really interesting to see the effects of something like this in, you know, even though it's just one patient, it'll be interesting to see if this study gains other results in other patients as well. So what are your thoughts?
You know, I was actually surprised to see this report, because this is the first that we've heard about other side effects, beneficial side effects that
right.
have come from Spinraza. You know, I think, in my opinion, I think we're going to see more beneficial side effects from Spinraza, such as the case with this child with the skin lesions. You know, this wasn't in any of the side effects that were noted during the clinical trials. But, you know, as time goes on and more people are given Spinraza, we may see more patients that have benefits not necessarily associated with the Spinraza treatment itself. You know, Spinraza is meant to replace that SMN2 gene, but it could also show some beneficial effects like it did with this child. So, you know, who knows what other benefits we're going to see. I mean, I think it's exciting, and I think it's a surprise to Biogen as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I know for me, when I back, before I started Spinraza, one of the things that made me really anxious about it was hearing about all the negative side effects, right? You know, I mean, I'd heard people experience, you know, horrific headaches, and there were other side effects listed on their website that they, of course, had to list. And, you know, that made me really nervous about it. And fortunately, as I've written about and talked about on the podcast, I've not experienced any of those negative side effects. And my treatments have gone really well. I know yours have as well. But this is really interesting to see some of the positive side effects come about. Even if it is just one case report right now, this very well could happen in other cases in the future.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Well, those are the news stories we wanted to discuss. And, you know, you can find plenty more on the main page on our website. But I wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the forum posts and work from our columnists on the SMA website over the past few weeks. And so for our listeners out there, if you have not yet registered for the SMA News Today forums, now is a great time to do so. You can find all the information on our main website. And I actually just put up an article last week that with an updated description of the forums and instructs you how to sign up. So please do so. It is a great community to be a part of. But the first topic I wanted to look at was posted by Deanne Runge a few days ago, and it's titled Having Your Significant Other as Your Caregiver. And you can find this in the Dating and Relationships forum. So this topic was sparked by a recent episode of Dr. Phil, which was very controversial in many disability communities. And I'll just go ahead and sum it up by basically Dr. Phil had an interabled couple on his show recently, and interabled meaning that one person had a disability and was a wheelchair user. The other one did not, is able-bodied. And the gist of it is that, first of all, this couple was, they had, you know, many other issues besides just having to deal with the disability in their relationship. They were, like many couples on his show, it was a very sensational story, and they had a lot of other issues going on. But the gist of it is that Dr. Phil said to them that, he says to the woman who is able-bodied, you cannot be this man's lover and caregiver. You have to choose. And he went on to say an entirely false statistic that saying that 100% of the couples that do this, where they have the person be both their caregiver and significant other, that these relationships fail. And so this, of course, sparked a lot of controversy. It came to my attention because Shane Burkaw, who's a popular SMA blogger and nonprofit founder, he and his girlfriend Hannah were asked to be on this episode, and they declined to do so. And they made a video afterwards, and they were very glad that they did not come on the show because of all this that happened. So, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on this, but Michael, I wanted to ask you your thoughts and see, you know, how much you follow this story.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I saw the same video you did, and I even wrote Shane and told him, I said, I'm thankful that you and Hannah didn't go on that show, because
right.
I really think that Dr. Phil would have painted them out to be the bad guy. You know,
right. Right.
I don't think they would have received any, you know, positive press from it.
And, right.
You know, I don't understand. I think if you find somebody like Shane found Hannah, they're together. Yeah, they argue and they fight, but you can't live with somebody and be somebody's partner, lover, mate, without a fight every once in a while. But if you listen to them, they work through these arguments and they deal with it on not only an emotional level, but a physical level. And I think that's what separates Shane and Hannah. The couple that was on the Dr. Phil show, like you said, had a lot of other issues that really, I don't think, related to any handicap or medical need. I think right. It was just one was feeling frustrated that they were having to take care of the other person, and that's just going to be normal frustrations that people have to deal with. So, yeah, Dr. Phil's receiving a lot of negative press, and in my opinion, rightly so.
Absolutely. Well, and in some ways, I'm glad that this did happen because it brought up a really important discussion topic. And, you know, this is an issue that, we've talked about, I've talked about with other couples and at conferences, and it's really interesting to see. And you can, again, listeners can follow the discussion on this forum topic, but, you know, there are many interable couples with different perspectives on this. You know, I've talked to people who, they don't want their significant other to be their caregiver much at all because they want that to be separate and they want to be independent, which I respect that. And then there are others who are total opposite. They, it very much works out for them for their significant other to be their caregiver. And, you know, I've interviewed couples in that situation. And, you know, if the bottom line comes down to you have to do what works best for you. And, you know, I mean, me personally, if I were in a serious relationship, I would probably strive for a balance of the two. You know, I would not want my significant other to be my only caregiver personally, but you're inevitably going to have to rely on them for some things. And, you know, I mean, I think about it in my life that, you know, I'm all the friends who help me out regularly, you know, I'd be really lost without, you know, those people. And I have to rely on other people regularly. And some are friends, some are paid caregivers. And you know, usually oftentimes when friends help me out or if they go out of the way to do something, you know, I mean, I return the favor. I always I'll buy them dinner or whatever. And, you know, or if I pay a friend to help me out some on the weekends, like I'm doing right now, a friend of mine who's driving me around to physical therapy and just to hang out on the weekends, you know, I pay for him for his services and I buy him lunch and stuff like that. So, you know, there's. So I'm glad that, you know, this controversy did spark a really good discussion. But yeah, it is hilarious that, it's hilarious and also just appalling that Dr. Phil would say something like this. I mean, in some ways it doesn't surprise me because he's a big shot TV personality and, you know, he just reinforced a lot of stereotypes, but I am glad that, you know, many people in various disability communities spoke up against him. And, you know, said that, hey, I'm in a relationship where this works and, you know, you don't have a right to inflict your philosophy on me and tell me what to do, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, he got a lot of negative press and rightfully
yep.
so.
Yeah.
But now I want to see if he comes back and makes any kind of a editorial change to it. Like, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But, you know, it's kind of like you said, Kevin, he's going to make everything dramatic. He's going to sensationalize it, and that's for his show. And it has nothing to do with the relationship of how Shane and Hannah get along or any other interabled couple.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, thank you. No, thanks for sharing your thoughts there. And the other post I wanted to talk about is a column by Brianna Albers, who's one of our regular columnists on the SMA site. And you can find this column both on the main website and in the forums. And it's titled When Vulnerability is Harder Than Usual. And I think this is a really great column and an important topic to discuss because it addresses both disclosing your disability in social situations and also, like we were just talking about, relying on other people for help when you have SMA. So I'll go ahead and I have the column right here. I was going to go ahead and read an excerpt from it real quick, but so this paragraph is a little toward the bottom, but it reads, and this is Brianna talking again, I've gotten better over the years, but when it comes to socializing, I'm almost afraid. Not that I'll be shunned, necessarily, but that my disability will become an obstacle in lives other than my own. I remember dimly having people over as a child and knowing somehow that our friendship was one of obligation. Maybe their parents forced them. Maybe they felt bad for the girl who always spent recess by herself, sitting beneath the trees on the far side of the playground, spinning in circles. Maybe it was some combination of the two. I honestly don't know. But I carry it with me, the mistrust of intention, forever looking at the people in my life and wondering why. So, you know, this is a really powerful column, I think. And I appreciate just how open Brianna is about this subject. And it's a hard subject to discuss because, again, she kind of goes into different areas of vulnerability in this column. She talks about, you know, what it's like to write about your disability, what it's like to advocate for yourself, and what it's like to have that anxiety when it comes to social situations, which I think all of us can relate to in some way, whether we want to or not, you know, whether, you know, Brianna openly admit, this isn't, you know, I'm not sharing something private. She openly admits that in her columns that she does suffer from social anxiety. And so that does play a lot into, especially the excerpt that I just read. But even for people who don't, you know, necessarily have social anxiety, there's always a certain, you know, anxiety when it comes to worrying about how friends will react to your disability or how your disability will affect social situations, whether it's, you know, oh, I'm too fatigued to be in this situation right now. Are my friends going to be okay with that? Or are they going to be okay with, like, calling the night, calling it an early night or whatever? So I'm really glad she wrote this article. But Michael, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, this is a touchy subject because everybody's going to be different.
Right.
Whenever I was being raised, you know, I don't have any sisters or brothers. Or, well, I take that back. I've got an older brother. But the two girls that I grew up with for, you know, the first 20 some odd years of our life, we lived next to each other from the time that we were born. And so I didn't have sisters biologically, but they were like my sisters. And so I was being raised around able-bodied children. They were being raised around somebody that was in a wheelchair, and they never looked at my wheelchair. I mean, we went out on summer days. We would go miles away from home, and they drug me everywhere with them. They never saw the wheelchair. And I think I was raised in the 60s and 70s. I think in today's times, it's a little bit different. I don't think people are quite used to acceptance. You know, the first thing they see is your wheelchair. That's the last thing I want them to see. I want them to see me for who I am, not as me sitting in a wheelchair. So all of my friends have gotten past that point where they don't even notice the wheelchair. As a matter of fact, a few of them made a suggestion about going golfing one day. And then one of them turned to me and said, "Oh my God, Michael, I can't believe I said that. You can't golf." And I said, "Look, I said, I'm thankful that you said that because that makes me know that you're not looking at the wheelchair." So, you know, it's a touchy subject and everybody's going to be different. But I've been in instances where people will treat me differently because they think they're supposed to.
And right.
That's what I don't want. You know, treat me just like you would treat any other person, irregardless of the wheelchair or irregardless of any other, you know, physical, you know, outward handicap that I may have. You know, I'm a living, breathing human being. Treat me as such, and you and I will get along great.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm glad you said that because I actually just wrote a column for this week that just went up on Tuesday. What was that, March 19th? And the title of that was SMA is a key part of my identity, but it doesn't define me. And I used actually a situation that just like you just described of, you know, being treated differently because of my disability as sort of the catalyst for that column. And this happened, you know, just a couple weeks ago when I went in for physical therapy and this person came up to me and the first thing that came out of their mouth was, you know, "So do you hope to not be in that wheelchair one day?" You know, and of course, like, I joke that I have kind of a sixth sense about these things when I just kind of know when a stranger is going to say something really dumb to the guy in the wheelchair. And, you know, I was pretty unperturbed because I'm so used to these comments. But, you know, my friend there who drove me to PT, he was just like appalled. And I, you know, after the person walked away, I told him, I'm like, "Yeah, this kind of happens quite often, you know, like with strangers." And it does, you know, provide me with a lot of comedy because I wrote jokes about it in my column and joked with them about it. But and it's fascinating to see because just like you said, like, I mean, growing up, I never had that issue at school as much because, you know, I grew up with the same people. And if friends ever asked me about my disability, it was always intelligent questions, you know. And then in college, I never really had that problem either because I was able to establish my own identity. And well, and in college, you know, if people would ask me questions, it was often more about my service dog than anything else because I had a dog with me there on campus and, you know, people always wanted to pet her and whatnot. But it really is fascinating, the dichotomy between people who treat you like any other person and then ones like this person who I just talked about who, you know, they only see the wheelchair and they're the first question they ask is going to be about that and it's going to be something, you know, really foolish and ignorant, you know. And so it's – and I think it's because of that that it does make people with disabilities anxious about social situations. So – yeah, I'm really glad Brianna wrote this. I'm glad that she's always very honest in her work, and I encourage listeners out there to go read more of her columns. Her column is titled "The Wolf Finally Frees Itself," and it's available every Monday on the main website. And then mine, "Embracing My Inner Alien," is available every Tuesday. So that's basically how we're gonna do these roundtable discussions from here on for our listeners. Is, you know, kind of highlighting some of the big news stories we've run, as well as forum posts and columns, and just kind of sharing our thoughts. So, Michael, do you have any other final thoughts about either of the any of the posts we discussed today, or anything else you saw on the website that caught your eye?
I don't really have anything to comment regarding the first three topics, but the one where you talked about the guy that said that it asked you the question about, do you ever hope to get out of your wheelchair? I had a similar instance like that years ago whenever I was at the mall. This little girl, she was probably 3 years old, ran up to me and she touched me on the leg and she asked me what, you know, why was I in a wheelchair? And I thought it was really cute that she had the guts and gumption to come up and ask me. And I was ready to tell her, but her mother came and snatched her away from me like I was an evil wolf, and which really kind of surprised me. And she looked at her daughter and she said, "Don't touch the handicapped man. Now you have to wash your hands." And I looked at the mother and I said, "Ma'am, I'm not a microbial bacteria that your daughter is going to get sick from. I'm a living, breathing human being." I said, "She just wanted to know why I was in a wheelchair." And her mother looked at me and she said, "Well, I don't want her asking those questions." And I said, "You know what? That's the wrong attitude. You want her to ask, because I'll tell her why I'm in a wheelchair instead of her coming up with ideas on her own." So it doesn't surprise me that people react the way they do, even though you and I don't want it to happen. It's going to continue to happen.
Well, and I'm really glad you brought up that instance, because I have the exact same feeling when it comes to parents like that. You know, I would much rather kids come up and ask. And even if it comes across as a little rude, you know, like what happened or whatever. And I've written columns about this subject exactly, but I would much rather them come up and have their questions answered, because otherwise you're encouraging ignorance, you know. And kids are curious. They want to, they see something that they don't see every day. They're not, you know, they don't see someone in a wheelchair every day. And when they do, they're going to have a natural curiosity. And I think that's a really good thing, you know. But it, just like you said, I'm very frustrated when parents try to disencourage that and pull their kids away from us, because it just, like you said, it just encourages them to have their own ideas and their own misconceptions rather than just asking us directly.
That's right.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for joining me today. This is a really great discussion. And like I said, for our listeners out there, we will be back every month doing these. We post articles, podcasts, and YouTube videos about SMA every week. And you can also connect with us directly on the SMA forums. Both of us are there. Michael, you want to say any final thoughts? Or
I just hope everybody's enjoying these roundtable discussions. It's something that Kevin and I really enjoy doing, and we hope it's being beneficial to everyone.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'm Kevin Schaefer, community editor for SMA News Today.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.